Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 7 of Game On with Cody and John.
This episode's big deal.
We're all in this together.
We'll take a look at cooperative games.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, Dominion. Is it in the cards to add this to your gaming collection? We'll talk about it.
All of this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, this is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about board games, card games, and other tabletop games.
And role-playing games.
The occasional role-playing game. We'll eventually fit that bill and actually have some role-playing content. How are you doing today, Cody?
Good. The Colts have won, I believe, 3 games in a row and are in the wild card hunt.
And I see that you're sporting your very classy Colts blue and white hooded jersey.
I am the helmet hoodie, as it were.
It's
quite warm and Coltsy.
It's very nice. If only we had a video podcast, we could share that with the listeners.
I would not want to punish them that much.
So what do we got going on for the show today?
Well, of course, we got the game on Inbox. We have a great big deal about cooperative games. A lot of new ones have come out recently.
I know. It seems like that's a new trend in gaming where people like to sit around and work together on a game and not
I like to thrash the enemies beneath my feet, but you know.
Yeah, sounds like a bunch of political correct
hootenanny
to me. We'll talk about it.
And we've got the new hotness, as it were, Dominion in our Buy, Try, or Deny.
That's right. The big game from Essen 2008. We got our hands on a copy, and we're going to take a look at that game. It's sort of a deck building game where it. Well, we'll talk about it
I do wish it had more cards, though.
Really, 500 wasn't enough for you?
No, not quite enough, okay. But we'll get there soon enough. Let's kick it off with the Game On Inbox.
It's time for the Game On Inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find.
Well, it's time for the Game On Inbox, and as always, we're going to start it off with some games we've played lately. John, what have you been playing?
All right, well, this past Friday, I had a friend from high school down in Texas come up to visit for the weekend.
So he's the one.
The one friend that I had. Yeah. Hey-o. Yeah, well, I've got two now because I've got you, right, Cody?
Oh, gosh. Would you stop?
All right, so we played Battlestar Galactica, the board games. It was quickly becoming one of my favorite games, and also a cooperative game, or semi-cooperative, which we'll be talking about in our big deal segment.
We call that a teaser in the biz.
That's right. Just stick around and stay tuned. And so I played this with my wife and with my buddy Dave, who came into town, and found that a 3-player game of Battlestar Galactica actually played pretty well. I was concerned about how scalable it was going to be, but it turned out from the very beginning that my wife was indeed a fracking toaster.
Uh-oh. And were the humans successful in finding the way to Earth?
No, they only got 2 distance points out of the 8 that you needed to get. And but you know, by the time we got to the very end,
Are terrible.
It was terrible. We never drew any cards that would prepare the jump track, and then it got really bad because when my wife revealed that she was a Cylon, her card allowed her to damage 2 sections of the ship, and so she damaged the FDL drive.
Naturally.
So we neither my character, who was William Adama, or my buddy's character, which was Laura Roslin, none of us had any engineering skills, so we couldn't even fix the FDL drive.
Oh, nice.
And so that made it for a difficult. But by the end of it, we literally ran out of plastic ships to put on the board. There was so much stuff attacking us.
I have yet to see a game of Battlestar Galactica where the humans have won.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I'm trying to get to that point, I guess. But we both commented on the fact, Dave and I both commented on the fact that it was so much fun to sit there and just have doom and gloom and sadness and like, oh, I'm having so much fun and we're so screwed. So that, you know, still a great game. So I think that one's just, I just started seeing that one in my friendly local gaming store this past week. So as we've said in other previous episodes, pick that one up.
Indubitably. And we broke in the gaming room at my new apartment with a pair of games, first of which was Once Upon a Time.
Yep, and I actually bought this game upon the podcasting recommendation of the guys over at the Pulp Gamer podcast.
PulpGamer.com.
That's right, very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
So that's Don Dem and Derek Rex and Jeremiah Lynch. They just talked in one of their shows about this game. It's like a storytelling card game, and it was so intriguing that I went and checked it out. We'll definitely have a link to the Pulp Gamer podcast on our website in the show notes. Go and check them out. But this game is it's like a storytelling card game where every card is sort of an element to the story, and everyone is dealt a certain number of cards, and they're also given a happily ever after card. So the goal as you're going around the table is you're trying to tell a story and play the cards that are the elements of that story so that you can eventually play your happily ever after card. There's elements where you can interrupt other players. And what did you think of the game, Cody?
Oh, I liked it. It was fun.
Yeah. But it's not for everybody, I don't
no,
think.
it's not for the kind of more introverted gamer crowd, you know, that would just rather kind of sit and look at cards and make decisions.
Right, it's a game.
You know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to say it.
No, it's a game that kind of transcends the components of the game and also even the rules. The whole point of it is just to have a good time. I've heard it described on Board Game Geek that it's almost more of an activity than a game.
Yeah.
Because there's a competitive element to it, but you don't really care.
It's an activity I won at.
Yeah. Actually, Cody was pretty good at it. He was able to get to his happily ever after card two times. Single L was not maybe the best storyteller. I think he would admit that himself, and I was probably somewhere in the middle. But that's a fun little game. I think it's worth picking up. If you get the right crowd of folks who are creative and like to tell stories, it can be a fun way to pass time.
Yep.
I'll take it.
By all means.
We also had a chance to play a game that we've mentioned on the show before here, the Red Dragon Inn. We introduced this game to Single L because he'd never played it before, and I think he enjoyed it quite a bit. This great little card game. It's got a collectible card game element to it, but Cody's raising his eyebrow at me, so I think he doesn't agree with me. All right, you can turn off your Tom Vassal wine there. But it's a fun game.
Indeed. And we also got a chance to play that at the Game On edition of Worldwide Wing Night 5.
That's right. What a great time that was.
It was a very good time. We got to eat wings. We got to watch some football and play some games.
That's right.
We did have a few listeners via Fear the Boot show up, as well as some friends in the area that we had here. And I had a great time. We had, what would you say, 10?
10 or 11 people there, and really for only just doing a minimal amount of advertising. We know that the listeners of this show kind of come from all over the country and the world, so we weren't really expecting a great local turnout, but we did have quite a few listeners show up, and it was great. It was a lot of fun.
So the next time we do it, we will give all of you fair warning, and we expect to see more of you.
That's right.
Because we want to eat wings and beat you at games here in the beautiful state.
And I'd like to...
I was being dramatic, sir.
I didn't mean to step on you there.
It's Game On with John.
Oh, I just wanted to say that for all of you who did come out to the Worldwide Wing Night, thank you so much for not getting any wing sauce on my games.
It was very well done. Well, we do have some gaming news as always, and we have John over at the news desk, i.e. the chair a couple feet away. No.
Okay, I was trying. Well, the first piece of news just broke about a week and a half ago, and that's the kind of sad, strange news that the company WizKids is discontinuing operations and is discontinuing manufacturing of all of their games. Now, this is a company that produces games like HeroClix, and in the past, the game Mage Knight, also HorrorClix, the whole line of Clix games.
Clix, Ticket to Ride Clix.
Yeah, exactly. Agricola Clix.
Agricola Clix.
And as well as games like the Pirates of the Spanish Main collectible plastic pirate ship game, and the Star Wars pocket model game, and some other properties there. So kind of a sad story. They've always had a rather large presence at Gen Con. We've always noticed they have a really large booth at the front there, and it seemed like the Clix revolution that started a few years ago has finally kind of come to a petering halt.
Now, I do have one of my coworkers is a big comic book guy, and he puts out a newsletter, and in that was, there's a website, I think it's saveheroclix.com. We'll link to it in the show notes. That may or may not be right, but apparently there's a great kind of underground effort to keep the game going and keep the organized play community going, so we'll see how that works. But
oh, that's interesting. And I think that there's also supposed to be the company Tops, which is owns the WizKids name in that company, that division. I think they're looking for some folks from other companies to come in and purchase the licenses.
From what I heard, they've started to sell. I think HeroClix has been sold. Yeah.
Okay. So you may not, what I said earlier might not
I should
be
at the news desk. Look at me. I'm in weather. And
sorry.
It's cold.
We'll get to you in a second. But yeah, I guess what I said earlier might not be true. We may actually still see the Clix games continue. But kind of strange news about WizKids.
Right, and an entry on our Buy Try It or Die, of course, Dominion, like we mentioned, a new card may be available through Board Game Geek in early 2009.
Yeah, this is the Envoy card, which I was trying to find some information about it. I don't know if it was maybe a promotional card or something like that, but they're producing an English version of that card, and Aldi on the Board Game Geek website has posted that will be available exclusively through Board Game Geek, through probably their Board Game Geek store in early 2009. He says that it'll be about a $5 charge for shipping and handling, and that will get you 11 copies of this Envoy card. So it'd be like a new deck to go along with the 25 decks that come in the game.
But you do have to buy me an avatar and 3 micro badges first.
That's right.
It's in the rules. I mean,
yeah, you gotta throw Geek Gold at Cody, and then you can get the cards.
Give me your gold.
And one other little piece of news that I found that I thought was kind of interesting. And this might be something we may cover in a future episode of Game On, and that's the advent of these board games and card games that we love being turned into video games and having maybe online experiences. So lots of games like Ticket to Ride, Settlers of Catan.
I play Ticket to Ride on the Xbox, and my fiance especially, we play that a lot.
Yeah, and those games on the Xbox and Xbox Live. There's also a lot of online sites like Brett Spielwelt, and this site that I wanted to mention.
What was that? You made up a word.
Brett Spielwelt.
Bless you.
BSW.
No, I'm not hip.
You got to go check it out. It's mostly a European site.
No.
we can discuss it later.
All right.
Anyway, Game Table Online is another site that does online versions of tabletop games, and they have games like Guillotine. They have versions of like chess and checkers as well, but they're starting to bring in more of these European style games, and they were announcing that they're going to be releasing the game Battlecry.
Sweet.
Which is one of the ones from the Commands and Colors series by Richard Borg. It's the Civil War themed one, as well as 1960, The Making of the President, which is one of my absolute favorite games. It's in my top five, definitely. You know, and Cody, he's shaking his head right now. The only reason why he doesn't like it is because he has never won this game to me. I have beat him every single time.
Can't win if you don't care, good listeners.
Oh, see, you're trying to
I'm just saying
you don't care. That's sad.
Whatever,
that's sad.
Kennedy.
Okay.
Hope you don't get shot. Well,
well, that's the news, Cody. Let me turn it back over to weather.
Yeah, thanks. It's cold.
Yeah, it is cold in here. Oh, I think the temperature's dropped.
It was cold outside, buddy.
Okay.
It's fine in here. No, we did have a contest where a two-episode long contest where we invited you, the listener, to post a picture of you and yours playing a game.
Right, and we had, after 2 weeks of poking and two episodes, rather, of poking and prodding you guys to post something on our guild, we had a whopping 12 entries.
Not great.
A low percentage of previous Game On contests, but we do appreciate the extra effort. We got some extra entries.
They were good pictures too. It's really cool to see, you know, people, you know, the games they're playing, where they're playing them. It's neat.
Absolutely.
Well, we selected one with our great randomizer.
That's right. And so the winner of our contest for this episode and the recipient of our demo copy of the card game Wizard's Gambit is...
Which is a buy, by the way.
Or a try, depending on which one of us you really listen to.
Or a get for free in this instance. Mr. Andy Folk.
That's right, Andy Folk, or...
My God, you're folksy!
You're folksy! But Andy posted a really nice picture of him playing the game Dancing Eggs with his two small children, and they're very cute kids. They actually kind of remind me of my own kids.
Yeah, they do a little bit. They're about the same age.
Yeah, it's a really, really cute picture. Yeah, maybe I'll have to post some pictures of me playing games with my kids. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah. But Andy, congratulations. And we'll, if you could email us at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Our email address.
That's our email address. And tell us your address and we will send that game out to you. So congratulations and thanks for entering.
Well, I think we will close the Game On Inbox for now and get into our big deal. We're all in this together.
Let's do it. And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal? Welcome to The Big Deal. This episode, we're talking about cooperative games because, hey, we're all in this together, right, Cody?
We sure are, buddy.
Woohoo! You know, I've been looking at my game collection and looking on Board Game Geek, and I've noticed that recently there have been a whole lot of games that have come out that do have some sort of cooperative element to them. And I don't know if that's some sort of just trend or pop culture fad thing or whatever, but, you know, if I look back 10, 20, 30 years to games... to different board games, I can't really think of too many of them that have a cooperative element to them.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to generate a whole lot of response from folks who will be emailing the Game On Inbox to tell me that I'm wrong and give me a list of games, but that's okay. You know, if you guys disagree and want to give me a list of games from 1975 that are cooperative, feel free.
Did you know Carcassonne has a cooperative element?
No, it doesn't.
No, you and your friend can both pick it up and throw it in the trash.
That's something you can do together.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, we're going to talk about a lot of different cooperative games that have come out in the last few years. And if this is something that's interesting to you, or these might be some that you haven't thought of that you want to add to your game collection. Of course, the first one that comes to mind for me, because it's the one I played this past weekend, is Battlestar Galactica, the
buy
board game.
Yesterday.
Buy it as soon as you can. But this game is a cooperative game in that you're all playing humans that are trying to escape the evil Cylons. The Cylon-y Cylons.
They're idiom.
And try to get to Earth. And one interesting element to that game is, of course, that you have a hidden sort of traitorous element where you have someone who might be a Cylon. So that's a really great game, and it has in it one of the most important aspects of a cooperative game that I can think of, which is tension.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there always seems to be that you're, you know, one step ahead of destruction and that you could die at any moment, and that's one of the things that I think is really exciting about cooperative games.
I agree. Yeah, that game, especially once you get into the later stages, I mean... I think we've both played in games where it starts to get toward the end and no one's talking. Like, everyone's just kind of looking at each other and looking at their cards and looking at each other. And it's kind of cool. It's all tense.
Yeah, because inside everyone's head is, we're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die. So that's a game that has some kind of, I guess you would call it, a traitor element to it. Now, the first cooperative game that I ever really played that had a traitor element to it was, from Days of Wonder Games, Shadows Over Camelot.
You're the traitor.
And I am occasionally the traitor, and I'm quite good at it too.
My strategy is just always accuse everyone else of being the traitor, and
even early in the game.
Yeah, I didn't say.
I guess early in the game it doesn't really matter.
I didn't say I was good at it. You played with me. I'm always.
Yeah.
Well, even if there's not a traitor, I'll find one.
Well, and when you're playing these kind of games that have a traitor element in them, there's a lot of metagaming that goes on, I think. There's where you can really kind of get under the skin of the other players. It's almost like if you're playing diplomacy or something, you really get into the heads of the other players and try to, make them think that you're the traitor, or try to, deflect blame to somebody else.
I'm the twitchy paranoid guy when I'm not the traitor.
When you're not the traitor?
When I'm not the traitor. I always think everyone else is.
Yeah, and so you accuse them at every opportunity.
Yes, sometimes correctly.
Yeah, occasionally. John. Yeah, well, So and there's Shadows Over Camelot, which, if for those of you who don't know, that's a game about knights of the round table who are battling evil stuff that's happening in Camelot. There's all these quests that you can go on. And there's one player who possibly could be the traitor. You can either play the game where... one person is definitely the traitor, or you can always play it. And there's enough cards that loyalty cards where you could play it where there's no, you never know whether there's someone that's a traitor
in the
game. I like
that quite a bit.
Yeah, because if you get to the end of it and you realize that, oh, no one was the traitor, we've been wasting our time accusing everybody. But that's a lot of fun because it's almost like one person versus the whole rest of the table. Another game that has that sort of an element to it that's a card game is called Cutthroat Caverns from Smirk and Dagger Games. This is a game where you're played dungeon adventurers who are going in to kill a bunch of monsters in, I think it's, is it 9 or 10 monsters that you have to?
Yeah, 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm. And
I helped a lot, didn't I?
Yeah. Thanks for joining the podcast. But each player is going to be playing cards to attack the monster. And so you have to try to survive and get through all of these rooms to beat all the monsters. But you're also trying to get these prestige points. And the only way you can get the prestige points is if you are the player who deals the killing blow to the monster. So only the person who deals that last blow is going to get it. So it's kind of a cooperative game. And Cody was almost hesitant to add this one to the list.
Yeah, because it's cooperative to a point, and I think even more so than the other traitorous games, because you're always going to be messing with the other players, but you have to work together to a certain means. I mean, at some point in the game, you know, all pretenses are going to go away and you're just going to stab everyone in the back. But it's somewhat of a cooperative game. I guess if you want a cooperative game that's that has a good level of tension in player versus player, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, because it seems like you cooperate with your other players for just as long as you need to, and then when it gets towards the end, then it's every man for themselves.
Yep. Free for all.
And that's kind of unique. I'm not sure if I know of any other game that has that sort of a feel to it, where you're sort of helping each other, and then but then you're really not. So
yeah.
That's a really fun one to pick up. And I think there's an expansion for a couple of expansions for that game.
I know one is... one or two is out. I have the first one, Deeper and Darker, but I think they have like 4 or 5 planned that introduce new monsters and new abilities for the characters and all that.
Yeah, go. Yeah, we'll link to Smirk and Dagger's website, and if you guys are interested in Cutthroat Caverns, you can go check out the different expansions for that. One other game that is very near and dear to Cody's heart is Fury of Dracula.
Heck yeah. And the night time is the right time, my
friend. So tell us about that one, Cody, and what do you like about Fury of Dracula as a cooperative game?
It's awesome.
Thank you, Cody.
I'm just saying.
Could you elaborate a little bit?
If I must. Well, in Fury of Dr. Acula, it's you have up to 4 of the people hunting one of the players, which is Dracula, and the other up to 4 people are the hunters. And it's almost like both groups are playing a different game. You have Dracula kind of doing his own thing, trying to stay hidden, moving from city to city. He does it in a secretive way. I won't get too much into the game mechanics. But you have the hunters working together and trying to corner every route and make sure, you know, there's no way Dracula can get away. And I like playing as Dracula, and one of the main reasons why is I love to see how the other players react and how they deduce their strategy. It's for me, it's the same mechanic as why I like to be a game master in role-playing games, is I like to see how people react to situations or plan strategies to try and thwart whatever it is I'm throwing at them. And
you were the kid with the magnifying glass on the bug, weren't you?
No, not in a bad way. It's just, I'm very curious to see how people react to certain situations. And,
sure.
Fury of Dracula is one of those where you can get some great gaming stories out of it.
Yeah, we've had some pretty epic games of that have kind of come down to the last player or two. So that's a lot of fun. And I think that highlights another element of these cooperative games that make them exciting is the fact that having a shared victory in something at the end, I think is it's the equivalent of a team winning a football game or something.
Indianapolis Colts.
That's right. Or the Texas Longhorns against Baylor. Well, you know.
Nice. Yeah. I wish I could beat a high school.
Aw. That's wrong. But the fact that you can all celebrate the victory together, and it wasn't just one person who's, you know, can rub it in the face of everybody else who lost. You have multiple winners. I mean, is that almost kind of a product of our kind of politically correct world that we live in, where, you know, everybody has to win, there's no losers, and You know, we don't want little Johnny to feel bad, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if it's so much a product of that. I mean, you could take it that way, but I think it's just a different flavor for gamers. It's like, you know, 90% of the games we play, it's, you know, every man for himself. It's like, let's try, you know, using our shared knowledge against the evil game and the deck of cards.
Oh, yeah.
And see what we can come up with. And it's interesting to see, to kind of harken back to last episode, to see the different types of gamers, if you get a couple different types, to see how they work together to a common end. And I've seen some very interesting combinations in my time.
Oh, that's true. You mentioned the last episode, the rules guy.
Oh, yeah.
And the impatient guy.
Oh, yeah.
I guess if you get the rules guy and the impatient guy together playing in a cooperative game, that makes for an interesting dynamic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The impatient guy. Let's just do this. And the rules guy's, you know, got a paragraph on how the best way is to do it within the rules.
And it seems like the social element in a cooperative game is a little bit more complex than a competitive game, because if you're kind of out for yourself and you're trying to win for yourself, everybody's doing that, and they might have a different way of doing it. But if you're all working together, I mean,
you're social, you're active.
Yeah, and you have to work around other people's personalities and maybe deal with personalities that you don't like.
Right.
In that respect, it is a lot like a role-playing game, even the games that aren't designed that way. And speaking of role-playing games, one of my very, very favorite games that is a cooperative game that kind of takes a lot of elements from role-playing games is Descent: Journeys in the Dark. And this is a dungeon crawling game where one player is playing the overlord, the equivalent of the dungeon master, controlling all the monsters, and then you have an adventuring party that's trying to defeat the big bad at the end of the dungeon. And that's a terrifically fun game, and I've actually had enjoyed running that game at conventions. And what you just said, Cody, about you want to see how people react to things,
mm-hmm.
in that game, that's what I really like about being the overlord in a Descent game, is being able to see, you know, what I know what's coming in the dungeon later on, and it's interesting to see the decisions that they make.
Yeah, see, that's why you need to get into game mastering, because that's the best part. But in Descent, every time I've run it, you always get, and 100% of the time at the table, you'll get one guy who just wants to run ahead into every room as fast as possible, and you'll have the one guy who always wants to hang back.
Yeah.
And they always butt heads. It's like, let's pick up these potions. And, you know, the other guy, screw it, knock down a door or kill three giants.
Kill something.
You know, so that's fun in its own right. But Descent can be a really great cooperative game in the tactical sense, because you can start to really see people's tactical sides come out.
Yeah, that's true. And it's neat to see them make those decisions quickly as the monsters are attacking. One of my very favorites. If you've never played Descent, you need to play it at a convention, or, you know, pick up a copy and check it out. It's a price.
Sell a kidney and then pick it up.
it's pricey, but it's worth it. It's definitely a keeper. Now there's a couple of games from the same game company, from Flying Frog Productions, both Last Night on Earth and A Touch of Evil, the
Just
supernatural game. Just a touch.
I remembered.
Yeah, and both of these games have a cooperative element to them. In Last Night on Earth, you're playing a group of townsfolk who are fighting a zombie invasion, basically.
Go back and listen to our review if you missed it.
We never reviewed Last Night on Earth.
Why didn't we?
I don't go to episode -1 or so. You must be thinking of A Touch of Evil.
I am.
But in Last Night on
Earth, we'll roll with it.
We'll just roll with it. In Last Night on Earth, it's zombies versus these town folks. And so depending on what number of players you have, you're going to have some players playing zombies and some players playing the townspeople. So that's sort of a semi-cooperative thing. And in A Touch of Evil, you're playing a group of outsiders in a town that are battling this big evil villain and trying to
check out our review.
Yes, check out our review of that one. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. We have to review Last Night on Earth now at some point.
Yeah. I believe that was in episode 2 of Game On that we reviewed A Touch of Evil. So go check that one out. But in that game, it's a competitive game, but there's a cooperative option that you can play as a party, and you just play against a kind of a juiced up, more beefy villain.
I think it's much more fun than playing that game competitively, personally.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And from the same company that makes Descent, we have Arkham Horror, which is set in the Call of Cthulhu universe, and that plays with up to 8 players, yep, who are battling against the evil forces of the ancient old ones. And that game, Cody and I have played that game a few times, and boy, our opinion on it, I think, has kind of gone up and down as to whether we like it or not.
good with the right folks, because it can get kind of dense with the rules, and you just got to have the right people. I mean, that sounds kind of weird, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah, because it's a game with a lot of rules and a lot of pieces, even more so, I think, than Descent. I know Descent has a ton of pieces and little...
But it's more straightforward than Arkham Horror. I mean, I see where you're going with it.
Yeah, I think it's more organized, I think, than Arkham Horror.
And the learning curve for Arkham Horror is a lot steeper, because you do a couple missteps early in that game, and you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot recover from that. So.
And there's like three or four expansions for Arkham Horror 2. That's one
thing with cooperative games. Expansions aren't there to make it easier, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
No, don't buy them.
No, they will not make the game easier.
It's like
for
the
you.
Base game's easy mode, and every expansion you stack on. Yeah.
And I don't buy a whole lot of cooperative game expansions for that reason, because I usually think they're pretty hard. Maybe I'm just a terrible player.
People are going to email it. It's like, yeah. Suck it up.
Suck it up, buy it. Some of the more recent games that have come out that have a cooperative element to them, I know we're giving you a pretty big list here, but hopefully it'll give you some options for...
You have to write the show notes, so...
I know, I got to make all the links to these things, but some recent games that have come out are from Z-Man Games, the game Pandemic, which is about fighting diseases, and it's more exciting than it sounds, I promise. And then you also have the game Red November, which that just came out, I want to say like this month, from Fantasy Flight Games, and it's about a group of half-drunk gnomes who are running around a Russian submarine that is falling apart and catching on fire.
I know the feeling.
that's a pretty whacked-out theme,
indeed,
if you ask me.
And we're going to explore that further in next episodes by Triard and I.
That's right. That will be the game that we review for next episode. So stay tuned if you're interested in that game. It's a great little silver line game in sort of a small box that you can pick up. We'll have a full review of that for next episode. So we've given you by no means a comprehensive list of cooperative games, but it's a pretty good idea of what's out there right now.
A husky list
indeed. And so if you've never tried a cooperative game, we'd encourage you to definitely check one out. It's a lot of fun. It's sort of a different flavor from maybe the competitive games you might be used to. And there's some of these that we've mentioned are real gems that I think would be worthy additions to your gaming library. Just as kind of a final thought, in comparison with competitive games, Cody, how would you rate cooperative games? Like, for your gaming taste, what kind of game do you prefer, and where does cooperative games fit into your sort of gaming spectrum?
I like them every now and then. I mean, for example, we'll take Fury of Dracula, Two-Headed Coin. It's a cooperative game, and I like it, but who do I like to play as?
Dracula.
Dracula. Mm-hmm. I'm not a real team player. I'll come out and say it. It's like, if I lose, I want to lose on my own account. If I win, I want to win on my own account. But I do like a cooperative game. Don't get me wrong. It's nice to kind of break up the tedium of, you know, always, you know, oh, I'm against everyone, da, da, da. But for some people, they only like cooperative games, and that's perfectly viable situation there. But for me, it's a nice taste every now and then.
You know, I think I probably like cooperative games a little better than you because, well, for one thing, I feel like I'm not very good at games. I know I've said that before, that for being as big of a gamer as I am, I just feel like I just stink at a lot of games.
Yeah, you do.
And so, thank you.
Sorry,
so
buddy.
Being able to sit around the table in a cooperative environment, I guess I feel like my suckiness is diluted a bit. And so, you know, it's like playing a four-man golf scramble. I may be the worst player on there, but I still get to participate and possibly be a part of a victory. So that's a totally weak reason, but the other reason is because I guess I do like to be able to influence other people when I'm playing games. So when you have a cooperative game, usually if someone is sitting there saying, well, I'm not really sure what I should do, if it's a competitive game, a lot of times everyone around the table is going to go, well, pick something, just, you know, do something.
That's me.
But in a cooperative game, you're encouraged to help your fellow player figure out what they want to do. And so I guess I like that element of it.
You make me come off like a jerk.
I do. Well, it, I
life imitates art, right?
Believe me, it does. It's not that hard.
There's a lot of work for that insult. Well, I think that wraps up this episode's big deal. We're all in this together. So what do you say we move into Buy, Try, or Deny Dominion?
No, I think we should stick around here and discuss cooperative games some more.
And now Buy, Try, or Deny Dominion.
Okay, fine.
Buy, Try, or Deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started.
Well, it's that time again, listeners. It's time for this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, and for this one, we did pick the new hotness in the board gaming world, Dominion.
That's right, Dominion. The number one most played awesome super game from Essen 2008.
Super happy fun time.
newest offering from Rio Grande Games.
Rio Grande.
I still need to put in that email to Jay Tummelson to find out how it's pronounced, but Rio Grande Games. released in 2008, designed by Donald X. Vaccarino.
What do you think the X stands for if it doesn't stand for Xavier?
Xander? I don't know.
Just throwing that out.
Maybe
there.
It's just X, like
I'll
Harry,
let you get
Harry
back,
S. Truman.
I'll let you get back to your review.
Okay, let you get back to your nap. So this game is for 2 to 4 players, and it retails for about $40. You can find it online for a little bit less than that, I think. So
your friendly local online game store.
That's right. Your computer is right there. It's local to you. So in this game, we'll start off by going over the game components, and this will be the quickest that we've ever done game components.
Oh, yeah.
You get 500 cards.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! the game.
And a box.
And a box to put them in. And actually a rather interesting box insert. So, well, let me just break it down for you a little bit more here. You're going to be getting 25 kingdom decks. So these are decks of cards. They each have 10 cards, and then there's an 11th card that acts as a placeholder. So there's 25 different decks of cards like that. There are 3 victory point decks, 3 treasure decks, 1 trash card, and then a few blank cards, which I can't quite figure out what they're used for, except maybe if you lose a card, you can just jot down on it what it was. So
you could make your own cards,
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so what do all those different cards mean? Let me just kind of go over what this game is all about. Dominion is a deck-building card game. Now, for any of you who have played collectible card games such as Magic the Gathering in the past, one of the fun elements of a CCG is the deck building aspect of it. You can definitely pick up a theme deck for Magic the Gathering, pick up a couple of those, sit down with a friend and play the game, and it's fun. But once you play the game, you start to see that certain cards interact with one another and create these combinations that are more powerful. And so it sort of prompts you to want to go and buy a bunch of cards, which is what they want you to do, of course, and build your own deck that interacts, the cards interact in a way that you want to try to give you the outcome that you want, which is to win. In this game, Dominion, which is not a collectible card game.
No.
I want to make that clear that it is a standalone game and everything that you need for multiple plays and lots of replayability are in this box. And we'll talk about that replayability in just a second. But like a collectible card game, the whole point of Dominion is to build a deck of cards. So it's taken the deck building aspect of a CCG and made that the entire game. So the mechanics in this game are really unlike anything that I've ever seen. And I think that's one of the things that makes it very interesting and pretty cool.
It's wacky.
Yeah. So what you're going to do to set up the game is you're basically just going to set out all these decks of cards. Now, as I mentioned, you get 25 kingdom decks in the game, but you're only going to play with 10 of them. So the rule book gives you some options as to which 10 decks you're going to use for maybe a first game. They have some different ones like player interaction, big money. They have some names for them. But you could also just grab 10 random decks of cards from the box and throw them down and play a game with those.
That's what I like.
So that's a fun way to do it as well. And so you'll set out all your cards. You'll have those 10 decks of cards. You're going to have three decks of victory point cards worth values of 1, 3, and 6. And depending on the number of players you have in the game, there could be between 8 and 12 of those cards. Then you're going to have your treasure cards, which are copper, silver, and gold. And there's big, big stacks of those. The idea being that there's sort of an infinite amount of treasure that you can have. So they didn't want those decks to be able to run out. You'll also set your trash card down. We'll talk about what that does in a second. And then you're going to deal a hand of cards, or really a small deck of cards, to each player. And that's going to consist of 7 copper treasure cards and 3 1-point victory point cards. So everybody starts on the same playing field with treasure cards and victory point cards. So you're going to start off by shuffling that up and laying it face down, and that is your initial starting deck of cards. You're going to draw a hand of 5 cards to start off with. And so now we'll go over a game turn, and just as I'm explaining this, you should be able to get kind of a feel for how the game works. So on your game turn, the first thing that you can do is to play an action card. Those 10 decks that I was talking about, those are also called action cards. And so you can play one of those out of your hand. Now, the very first two hands that you'll have, first two turns, you're not going to have any action cards because you only start off with those treasure cards and the victory point cards. And so you won't be able to do this action phase in your first turn. The second phase of a turn is to buy a card. So you can buy a card with any treasure cards that are in your hand. Each of the action cards has a cost on the bottom left-hand side of the card, a cost in coins that you need to be able to buy the card. So all you would do is just lay the treasure cards down that add up to that amount, and then you'll buy that card. When you take the card from the pile, it's going to go immediately into your discard pile. And then that's the end of the buy phase. After the buy phase is the cleanup phase, in which you're going to take any cards that you've played, like action cards or treasure cards, down on the table in your play area. You're going to gather those up and discard them. And then you're going to take all the cards that are in your hand and discard those. I know that sounds weird, but that's the way your turn ends.
It takes some getting used to.
Yeah.
I think the first 5 or 6 turns, I was like, do what and the who now?
Yeah, I don't know any card game where you discard your hand at the end of every turn, but
You get used to it.
Yep. So after you've discarded all that stuff and your hands are empty, you're going to draw up a new hand of 5 cards from your deck. So as I said at the very beginning, you start off with 10 cards in your deck. So that first turn, you're going to draw 5 cards. Maybe buy a card and do whatever, you'll discard, and then you'll draw 5 more. And that will deplete your deck of cards in those first two turns. So when it comes back around to your turn, you'll do the same thing. Play an action card, which you can't do in your second turn either because you don't have one, and then spend any coins that you have to buy a card, and then all that stuff just gets discarded. So now you have this big discard pile by the end of your second turn. You're going to take that, shuffle it up, turn it over. That's your new deck of cards. You draw up 5 cards from that and, you know, lather, rinse, and repeat. So now this time when you draw up by your third turn, you're going to have probably at least 1 action card in your hand of cards. And so you can play that. And so that's kind of how the game goes. That's really the whole mechanics of the game is playing the action cards, buying a card, and then doing the cleanup. Now, how does this make for a fun game? Well, here's kind of the point. You want to end up with the most victory points at the end of the game. So when the game end condition hits, we'll tell you what that is in a second, you're going to count up the number of victory point cards that you have in your hand. So those victory point cards are the goal that you're trying to get to. The problem is that those victory point cards during the game do absolutely nothing.
They get in the way.
All they do is just get in the way and clog up your hand. So you want to purchase them because that's the way you're going to win the game. But if you buy too many of them too quickly, you're going to find yourself hamstringed. You're not going to be able to do anything because they're clogging up your hand. So this is sort of the balance and the play of the game. You're trying to play action cards that will allow you to get enough money to be able to buy the really good victory point cards towards the end of the game. And there are many different ways you can do this, and that is the fun and the replayability of this game. So let me just go over what some of the abilities are of some of the cards, and that'll give you an idea of how these action cards interact with one another. So each of the action cards is going to have just a text box that will give you a specific ability. And they're going to say things like this. For example, the market card says plus one card, plus one action, plus one buy, and plus one coin. And the market card is a pretty powerful card, and so a lot of cards don't allow you to do four things like this. But whenever it says plus one card, then you'll draw one card out of your deck. So when you play down this action card, it'll say plus one card, you draw a card. Plus one action means that now you get an additional action. So you've already played your one market card, now you can play another action card out of your hand on this turn. Plus one buy will mean that when you get to the buy step, you usually can buy one card. Plus one buy would mean you can now buy an additional card on this step. And plus one gold or plus one coin means that whatever coins you play down to buy a card, you get one added to it. So if you get a combination of these cards that have plus one action, draw plus one or plus two cards, you can be on your turn playing action cards, drawing cards, playing additional action cards, getting more and more money, and this engine sort of starts to be built.
Well, single L was really good at this.
Yeah, he really played was. It,
he made his little machine and that was it.
Yep, being the magic player that he is, he really has a mind for putting these combinations together. Oh, yeah. And I think if you are a fan of CCGs, you're going to find and if you have the mind for it, you're going to find that this game is going to be pretty exciting for you, I think, because you can see how these cards are going to interact. For example, another kind of card that's a sort of a different sort of card is the mine card. And that card costs 5 coins to bring it into your deck. And then when you play it as an action, it allows you to take one treasure card, trash it, and then upgrade to a better treasure card. Now, I mentioned earlier that there's this card called the trash card or the trash pile. And what that is when you buy a card in the game, it's going to go into your discard pile. So everything kind of stays with you. Even though you're getting rid of things, everything stays in your deck and will go back eventually. But if you're asked to trash something, then that card is going to go in the trash pile instead of into your discard pile. So the mine card will basically allow you to upgrade your treasure. You don't get to keep both of them, but you can turn in a copper and turn it into a silver. So that's a way to get more money, which will allow you to buy those cards. The highest victory point card, the 6 victory point card, costs 8 gold. And so you can sort of see that with a hand of only 5 cards every turn, you're going to have to do some things to be able to get to 8 gold. Because even if you have 5 coppers in your hand, that's not going
to
be enough.
Right, but it's worth it to really consolidate your victory points in as few cards as possible, because certainly one card that has 6 victory points on it versus 6 ones is really going to serve you a lot better.
Right, because if you get 6 ones, then you might find yourself with the same number of victory points, but with so many more cards in your deck that your hand gets clogged.
You're so limited in what you
and you're
can
not
do.
Able to do anything. Now, there are some cards that are more interactive. I will say one aspect of this game that might not be real savory to some people is that it does tend to lack a lot of direct player interaction. Mm-hmm. But there are some cards that try to alleviate that, and these are called attack cards. So, for example, in the basic setup, the basic 10 decks of cards that you would start off with, there's a card called the Militia. That card, when it's played, will give you plus 2 coins, and it will force everybody around the table to discard down to 3 cards in their hand. So that's sort of an interactive screw your neighbor card. But then there's a counter card to that, which they call a reaction card. And the reaction card in the basic set is called the Moat. And all you have to do is, if you have that card in your hand, when the Militia card is played, you just reveal that card to the player and you don't have to discard down. So it's a defensive card. And in addition, when the Moat is played as a action card, you get plus 2 cards. So I won't go into the details of all of the different cards in the game. That would take far too long. But needless to say, it's the interaction of these cards with one another that makes this game have so much variety. And as you play and go around, each person's turn is very quick, and you might find that, you know, you're still shuffling your cards by the time it comes around to you.
It moves real fast. Once everyone gets the game, this game flies.
Yep, and so it doesn't really take that long to teach someone how to play this. I mean, it took me about 5 minutes to teach a friend of mine at work the other day. And so it's a real easy thing to pick up. It's just the mechanics are kind of weird, so it might take a little while to get used to. So that's the basics, basically how the game works. The game is going to end when either the province cards are depleted. The province cards are the 6 victory point cards. So there's in a 3-4 player game, there would be 12 of those. And I think in a 2-player game, there's 8. But when that deck goes away, then the game is over. Or the other condition, and probably the more likely condition, at least in the games we've played, it's been that way. When any 3 piles of cards are completely depleted, then the game ends on that player's turn. And then you just add up all the victory points that are in your complete deck of cards, discard pile and your draw pile, and whoever has the most is the winner. So it's a real simple game, but just a unique set of mechanics and just unlike anything that I've seen before. So, Cody.
Yo.
It's that magic moment once again.
Oh, boy.
Dominion. Buy, try, or deny.
Can I say something first?
Oh, please. I've been talking for far too long.
I will say this. My day job, I'm a graphic designer by trade. The box art and the rules and the back of the card art, possibly the worst I've ever seen in a game. It's butt ugly. I mean, the art itself on the cards, fine. Mm-hmm. But just the box art and everything, it looks... I would not want to pick this game up if I just saw it. You know, I'm a visual guy. If I saw it sitting there, ugh.
But, I'll agree with you. especially the rules, that's what struck me, is that they're like a teal color with these pink boxes in them. And I don't know where that came up.
Now, I know what you're saying. You know, design does not make the game. I understand.
It's a part of it, though.
It is. But aesthetics aside, I do give this game a buy. It is one of the most unique mechanics in a game I've ever seen. It has huge just customization as far as the game type you want to go. If you want to play a real player interactive type game, you can do it. If you want to play a certain other type of game or just a wacky random kind of game, which is what I would do, you can do it. And it plays quick. It's easy to teach. And like I said, it's such a unique game and it's a breath of fresh air. So I would give it a buy. Now, John, it is that magic moment for Dominion. Buy, try, or deny.
Oh, this is a total no-brainer for me. This is a definite buy. I pretty much knew it before I placed the order for the game that this was going to be a buy for me, just because the mechanics are so interesting. I do enjoy collectible card games to some extent. And like we said in a previous episode where we talked about the Game of Thrones living card game, which is by far a more collectible card game kind of game.
Right.
I like being able to have a box that has everything that I need to be able to play a lot of different games. And this one, I'm not sure if
this
I've
is
ever...
It.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to get, just with the basic box here, I'm not going to get to... I won't ever reach the maximum of fun with this game. I'm never going to get sick of it, I don't think, of the customizability of it. I've even heard that they're planning on possibly making some expansions for this game with even more different kinds of cards. So, I mean, the possibilities are really endless for this particular system. So it's a lot of fun. I really think for the price, it is just cards, but it is over 500 of them. And so I think it's definitely worth picking up. So I give this one a definite buy.
As do I. So to recap, both of us gave it a buy, and this is Dominion.
So is it about time to close out the show?
It is that time, my friend.
Let's do it. Well, that just about wraps up episode 7 of Game On with Cody and John. We'd like to invite you to check out our website at www.gameonpodcast.com, where we'll have show notes with links to all the stuff that we've talked about this episode. And also, if you'll notice on the right side of the screen, when you go to our website, we have our donation button. If you'd like to donate to the Game On cause and help us to defray podcasting costs and buy some new equipment, then feel free to click on that and it'll take you right to a PayPal donation thing. And we'd really appreciate any support.
Yep. And we also have a link to our BoardGameGeek.com guild where you can share pictures, as many listeners have done, and also get in some interesting gaming conversations, as we've got a lot going on there. So come check us out.
That's right. And if you happen to have any questions, comments, or feedback directly for us, we would love to hear from you. We really thrive off of feedback from our listeners.
Thrive.
We do.
Ooh, so, it sustains me.
So if you have anything you want to say to us, please email us at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's the best way to reach us.
Absolutely. So we invite you to listen to our next episode in 2 weeks, where we will be talking about the new cooperative board game from Fantasy Flight Games, Red November.
In Soviet Russia, game plays you.
That's right. Soviet gnomes. Anyway, so we'd like to... nice. I'd like to wish all of our listeners a happy Thanksgiving, wherever you may be listening from, and we will see you next time.
Eat on!
No, that's game on.
Oh, sorry.
Welcome to this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny. Today we're going to be talking about cooperative
games. It's not Buy, Try, or Deny. You fail.
Wow.
Thanks for recording there.
Wow.
Game on with Cody.